Good day, everybody. This is Then and Now, the podcast. I'm your host, John Shomo, and this is episode 26. We're going to stray from the format a bit here this week and start with an interview. We're going to interview the one and only Mike Shadawa, health teacher, coach, longtime friend of mine and colleague at Talmadge High School. And many of you who listen know Coach Shadawa very well. So how you doing, Coach?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good deal. Let's for those listeners who don't know you, a little bit of your background. Where'd you grow up? Go to college, etc.
Okay. Originally from upstate New York, I grew up in Rochester. So it's between Buffalo and Syracuse on Lake Ontario. Ended up out at Kent State. Initially wanted to be an architect and. After a couple of other changes, I ended up in education. My aunt and uncle were both educators and really enjoyed their job. So I figured, what the heck? It sounded pretty good. Did my student teaching at Talmadge. Started coaching track and field at Talmadge and stayed at Talmadge.
You taught at the middle school for a while, right?
Yeah, I was at the middle school for about 9 years.
Yeah, I was your colleague down there when you were just starting. I had been there for a year or two, and then there were some changes in administration and so forth, and I shuttled on up to the high school fall of 1995. So, okay. Now, here's the question I wanted to ask. When did you know, you mentioned that you wanted to do something else, you wanted to go be an architect. When did you know that education was the thing for you to go into?
I had a couple summer jobs where I was working with kids at camp type situations. And then, I just was like, I really did enjoy that as far as the jobs that I had. And I started the classwork, and I initially started out in history. I've been a history a teacher, but then also looked at phys ed and went that route instead. And I did not get my health certificate until after I was already teaching. I had to go back to Akron to get that.
So you went to both Kent and Akron, huh?
Yes, I did.
Secret, I did too. I took a couple of journalism classes at Kent State in the mid-80s. I am, for those of you that don't know, I'm an Akron grad. So, and we're getting along just fine here. I know that my team's going to get beat by about 50 points next Saturday. So, all right. You gave us a good synopsis of your teaching career. You've coached a lot of different things. What are all the different sports that you've coached in your career?
Track and field at the middle school was where I started. And then my first varsity experience was cross country. I took over for Bill Berry and did that for 9 years. I had to learn on the fly, as it were. I was an extremely young head coach at the time, like 23, 24. And we started out, the size of the team was very small. We had 7 boys and 2 girls. So didn't even have a full girls roster. But by the time I ended up leaving, we had full teams on both sides, and we had kids at regionals all the time. I'd never had a kid make it to state for cross country. Definitely not as successful as Loveless or as Coach Huth were in that area. I also coached girls basketball. That was middle school, and then JV for that for a couple years. Also boys freshman basketball as well.
You can go through the hallway there in the gym hallway at Talmadge High School and see some pictures of Mike over the years. He and I both have the same issue. We used to have a lot of hair and it was dark, and then those pictures kind of, tell a story, don't they? Okay. I'm not going to get into how much longer you're going to teach here, but suffice it to say, you're in the fourth quarter.
That's a good way of putting it.
Okay. We'll leave it at that and move on. All right. I want to move to the college football landscape here. Just a note for you guys. I am planning on a college football podcast. We're going to try to put one together maybe for the first weekend of games, which is the weekend of August 24th, just as a preview for the season, and we'll see how it progresses. But look for that. We'll be talking more about that later. All right. Now, those of you that know us understand, right around Thanksgiving every year, the last few years, I would put on a scarlet and gray jersey, and Mike would don a maize and blue jersey. He's a fan of the Wolverines. I'm obviously a Buckeye fan. How did you come into your fandom for the Michigan Wolverines?
Well, it started when I went to Kent State, and growing up a Syracuse Orange fan, we could not watch Syracuse games, myself and other people from upstate New York, in the dorms, because we didn't have cable, and streaming wasn't available then. It was rabbit ears and with tinfoil on them. So, we always had Ohio State games on every single weekend, and the people in our dorm used to drive us nuts with cheering for them. So we gravitated towards rooting against Ohio State, and then became a Michigan fan. And once you've gone to that side, it's kind of hard to come back. So,
and we get along fine. Don't worry. Yeah, that's an interesting story. That you don't hear that, you know, as a reaction to other people. Usually people kind of come by it through their families or something like that. So are you still a Syracuse Orange fan?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So you get to root for Kyle McCord this year.
I do, for sure.
How about that? As the world turns. And I hope he does well up there too. Okay. Now we have a little contest that we've started about 10 years ago. People throw in a penny or two, and we pick some teams, and at the end of the season we see who wins. And the guy sitting here next to me has won the last two college football pools in a row. The only time anybody's gone back to back in that. How do you explain your success in the pool?
I've been extremely lucky. I think that a couple of my picks, not too many people had as well in the pools. You know, I've looked at how I end up choosing my groupings is I do look for, trying to get two teams per conference a little bit. And I go through like probably about 3 to 4 different publications, just looking for some consistencies with that. And I think a lot of us do that. And I've just been really, really lucky is what it boils down to.
Your favorite teams had a couple of good years too, I'd say.
Yeah, that definitely didn't hurt.
So that's that you answered my next question just about is there a pattern or is there a philosophy that you use? And you said kind of pick two teams per conference. It's harder. I found it much harder to pick this year. There's a conference that disappeared from the face of college sports, one of the most prominent ones of all, the Pac-12. There's no more divisions in all but one of the conferences, which makes what we pick, I think, a lot harder. I had a lot harder time finishing my picks this year than normal. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, it actually added on at least a good hour to an hour and a half for me, just going through stuff. And I know just from talking to other people, it's definitely had that same effect on their picks as well.
Yeah, they're starting to roll in now. We'll do more about that when we launch the college football podcast later on in a week or so. Okay, now here's my other question for you. We've both attended a lot of games. What's the best game, college football game, that you've ever seen in person? We've all watched a lot of great ones over the years on television. What's the best game that you actually attended?
It was the game up in Ann Arbor. I think we said it was, 2004? Five, Michigan did lose. The game was really close. Came down to like final drive, and Anthony Gonzalez made an incredible catch to win the game for Ohio State.
Yeah, that was Troy Smith. I think Brent Musburger was calling him Houdini on the telecast, because he kept escaping the rush and getting out and making a play every now and then. He was pretty good. Okay, I would have to say in answer to that, I've seen some great ones. I've seen the games in Columbus. I saw the 04 game, the 2014 game, and the 2016 game. I'll have to pick the 2016 game just because of the insane way it ended. And my story is this. That's the game where JT Barrett went for it on fourth down and an inch and maybe got an inch and maybe didn't. And kept the drive going in double overtime. Matt, my son, and I were sitting in C deck in the end zone that Ohio State was driving toward. And we had no angle whatsoever of whether or not he made the 15-yard line, which he had to do. You start the drive on the 25 in overtime, you got to get to the stripe of the 15. I saw the referee, the side judge, run up the 15-yard line with 1 foot on either side of the line. And so I thought, well, that means he probably got it. Then they said, well, the play's under review. They started to play a couple replays on the scoreboard. The first replay they played, he didn't look too good. And the Michigan fans that were there, and there are a good number of them at the game, and vice versa when the game's in Ann Arbor, started to cheer a little bit. Then they showed another replay from a different angle. They never had a good angle of that, a definitive angle. And the second one looked a little better, like he might have got the ball to the 15-yard line. So then the Ohio State crowd cheered. And then the official, and before the official made the announcement, Matt turned to me and said, these guys are never getting out of here if they overturn this. And I don't know, he might have been right. I said, and I've heard the referee explain it on a TV thing after. He said, we didn't have an angle that we could say definitively one way or another. So the call stands, which is what they do. So he said, play stands is called first down. 25 seconds later, Curtis Samuel is running into the end zone. It's just, it's mind-boggling how fast that happened. And then all hell broke loose, at Ohio Stadium. That was the biggest crowd they'll ever have, by the way. They got 110,000 of us in there that day. Then they redid B-Deck and took some seats out, so I doubt they'll ever be able to jam that many people into Ohio Stadium again. But, I mean, that's the way that rivalry goes. I found it, by the way, interesting. I've been there to see some other teams, too. And if you ask the average Ohio State fan, they don't mind the Michigan folks so much. They've been doing it forever, right? I think they'd tell you that the Penn State people were a lot more obnoxious, for instance. For any of you Penn State folks out there, sorry.
Yeah, when we were up in Ann Arbor, I mean, there were Ohio State people like sitting right around us in the student section because that's where we had our tickets from, and nobody gave them a hard time, and, cheering, razzing maybe a little bit here and there, but nothing bad. I've heard worse language in the dog pound on Sundays than I did in that game, but I would say if you guys ever get a chance to go to that rivalry game, definitely go. Doesn't matter what side you choose to root for. It's the atmosphere is just incredible.
I would agree. And the people, I see Ohio State and Michigan people tailgating together in Columbus, before the game. We will give a good nod to the people that Ohio State fans say are the best fans, and that would be Nebraska. They're just really nice. And they come and they enjoy it, and they compliment you and all of that. So, okay. Well, thanks, Mike. Glad you got to do this, and I'm glad we got the equipment to work. We had a little malfunction last time we tried this. But there's Mike Shadawa, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll move on here momentarily to our regularly scheduled programming of Facts for the Week. Thanks, Mike. Yep.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.